If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
It's the Growler with BD&J. Here to analyze for you today. From Growler Bad to Jay's Got Stats. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Growler Podcast. Paul Daniel Jr. here from The Athletic. Mark Chalifou is here. Let's hear it for Mark. Everyone's favorite raging heavy metal listener.
I'm glad you went with that.
Yeah, heavy metal is a good
raging thing. Raging something else.
Yeah, no. Jay Morrison, let's hear it for Jay. It is. It's awesome to have all you out here tonight. Of course, we're down here. We're at BetMGM Sportsbook at the Banks, and it is awesome in here. I mean, it's cool to see this place just packed out like this. But are there enough TVs? Did we get the Knicks game on a big enough TV for you?
It'll have to work, I guess.
Yours just. An insane amount of TVs. There's places to go place bets if you're feeling like doing that. Of course, we're here at Nation Kitchen and Bar. Hopefully, everybody, I see lots of drinks. Raise a glass if you're drinking. Let's hear if you're having a drink. Thanks to everybody here at Nation. Of course, get your food. I had the quesadilla burger. Just destroyed it. It was messy, but I kept it clean. I was able to keep it clean, which was, there were a lot of people betting against that.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a real mess. I thought you were going to have to pull yourself off the live stream after you embarrassed yourself with your burger, but you did okay. So you came through the other side.
No major drippage, so I'm feeling good about that. Thanks to them for having us down here, and it's an absolute blast. I want to remind you guys that this is an absolute one-of-a-kind experience. 350 square foot video wall. That's a large amount. 14 self-service wagering kiosks. Got the outdoor patio. Here's the thing that I like. The part, the VIP room in the back. If you've ever wanted to be a VIP, you can just make yourself a VIP. It's an awesome thing to do. It. Get your friends together, go back there. Tons of TVs, your own bar, all of it. You can throw a big old party back there. I think that would be pretty awesome on a like NFL Sunday.
Yeah.
Get your boys.
Not during the middle of our show.
You're selling them now.
A different part of the venue. Everybody leave to go to the VIP room.
Stay here.
Can we do it on the bye week?
I love the idea of doing that in the bye week. I am fully in support of that. All right, I want to, before we get going, we were going to get to our guest here, but first, the Bengals made 10 picks. They made 10 picks this weekend. So I think for you guys to help us out, I'm going to just say the name of a pick, and let's hear from you your feelings, okay? Vibes. Let us know how you feel about that pick. I'll tell Mike to cover his ears in case there's any booze might have.
There's no grades here tonight. Grades are out. Yeah. It's all vibes. All feelings.
Yes.
A lot of optimism here. I feel in a good mood seeing all of our listeners here. I was already told I'm the most attractive of the Growler hosts, which I didn't expect to hear, but low bar, sure.
The baldness is an issue. There's no question.
So good vibes. When you say, are you doing all of them? How many are you doing?
We'll see. We'll see how this goes. How about the first? Let's start with Amarius Mims from Georgia. What's our vibes?
A lot of fans.
We're getting hearts from over here, which, I don't know. There's been a lot of issues with that lately.
Don't do that to Caitlin Clark.
Don't do it to Caitlin Clark. It's a whole thing. So a lot of good vibes. I mean, it's hard not. If you've seen Amarius Mims in person, it's hard to not know that this is a hell of a vibes pick.
I think that, what you just heard, is going to sound like silence in about 9-10 months. Because I think it's just going to keep climbing and climbing. This city's going to fall in love with that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's He was really personable. I mean, when we had the opportunity to kind of talk to him, and you know, you think a guy like that, you know, he's going to be some big angry man. He's not. I mean, he's like kind of like he has a lot some teddy bear tendencies to him. He's was a very nice guy, and I think the more you guys hear from him, you'll get to like him. All right, let's go. I can't just be predictable here, so I don't want you guys to have your answers ready. How about, let's say, local man from Fairfield, Eric All in round four. What do we think? It feels like we're almost just pandering at this point. Like, it's chances to yell and scream, but Jay's the expert on all things Fairfield in the Hamilton area.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not like a guy from Fairfield? Although there's been another Bengals player from Fairfield who hasn't quite gotten the love from the fans. But I think Eric All is really going to be another one of those guys that everybody's going to like. Lots to like about him, his makeup, and then what he can do on the field as a pass catcher and as a blocker. And they took him earlier than I think a lot of other people would. I think that speaks to what the Bengals think of him.
Is he going to be healthy? Is he going to be able to start camp? What's the feeling there? What's the vibe?
He said he is, but they always say they are. But Bengals offensive coordinator Dan Pitcher said he expects him to be ready to go. So I think you'll see him on the field during training camp, and we'll see how far along he is.
All right, next one. Let's see here. Let's go with Chris Jenkins out of Michigan. That wasn't as strong as it should be. I gotta say, I thought Chris Jenkins was the best.
That was pretty good.
It was okay. I thought it could have been better. I'm a little
probably
disappointed.
Probably Buckeye fans out there that aren't quite sure if they're ready to cheer for a Michigan guy.
Is that
again?
Yeah.
Oh, you Buckeye fans need to get over it. He's gonna be awesome.
I think he was the absolute best possible scenario there. And he's gonna be fun to watch. Talk about wait till you meet this guy. He's an absolute delight. If you meet him in person, you're gonna really like Chris Jenkins once you get to meet him a little bit. All right, one last one. Let's go with Jermaine Burton, receiver out of Alabama. What do we think? More cheers, more excitement. It's definitely just pandering at this point.
And that's kind of what we wanted to do at the start of the podcast. Can you guys hear Jay? Okay.
How's the volume on this mic?
All right, in the back we're good.
All right.
Good.
In front, I think they. All right. Seems like you can't hear it over here, and okay. It's just Jay's mic. Just Jay's. All right, so we'll
That's
work
okay.
on that.
It doesn't really matter anyway.
We'll give that mic to Paul, so we'll solve the problem that way. And we'll just let Jay interview Mike here.
That works. That absolutely works. All right. Again, want to thank everybody for coming out here to BetMGM Sportsbook down here at the Banks. They are rocking and rolling down here every day. Great place to come pick it. Come down to the bar here at Nation before Reds games any other time. It's just an awesome spot down here. All right, let's take a quick break, and we're gonna bring our guest here tonight, our guy, Mike Potts. All right, let's take a quick break. Right. We are now welcoming our special guest, and I really want let's hear it for him. Bengals Director of College Scouting, Mike Potts, is here with us tonight. Good day. 10 picks plus UDFAs. The man has been busy. You've been busy. What is this moment like? Is this the ultimate sense of relief? Are you able to just calmly look back at what just transpired, or you just still now you're thinking about 2025 mock drafts, baby?
I need a couple days before 2025, but it is nice to sit back and look at all the work that went into it and exhale a little bit and just kind of assess the draft class and the 10 guys that we added in terms of draft picks, and then, like you said, the undrafted free agents as well are a big part of it. So you know, feel like we accomplished a lot over the past few days in this draft, and we're really happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah. You guys talk all the time about you just got to let the draft come to you. You obviously go in with a plan. How often are you surprised when you end up with your draft class at the end where something really catches you by surprise, either positionally or a player that was there that you never thought would be there?
I think you're surprised all the time. You do all the work to be as prepared as possible. You go through every possible scenario you can, but there's always surprises. Every team in the league has a different draft board and different evaluations on all of these players. So you're always surprised in good ways and maybe surprised in other ways as well, with guys going earlier or guys being available to you that weren't expected to be there. So no matter how much work you do and how many scenarios you run through on your board and in your draft meetings, there's always going to be surprises, and that's just something that we have to be prepared for.
All right, let's jump right in. Let's jump right in at the top. Amarius Mims, Georgia. 6'8", 345, that's a good place to start with a human being that
it
plays
is.
Football. If I, before the night began, you're in there at dinner, you're eating your fajitas or whatever, and I said, what are the percentage chances it's Mims tonight? You guys have run every scenario, you've tried to think it all the way through. What would have been the percentage chances you would have thought at that point it was going to be Mims?
I couldn't put an exact percentage on it that he would be there. We just stack our board 1 through 18, 1 through 49 where we were in the second round, and so on all the way down to our third and fourth round picks all the way down. He's a guy that we really liked, obviously. We knew there was a chance he would be there because it was such a great tackle draft class this year in terms of the depth at that position, especially up top in the first round. And then with his lack of play experience, you're going to poke holes in all of these guys. But I think at the end of the day, we're fortunate maybe because of those two factors. In another draft, or maybe if he played a full year this year or had a little bit more play experience, a guy like him with, like you said, a rare human being is not going to be sitting there for you at pick 18. He probably, if some of those other things weren't true, those other factors that I mentioned, he's probably going a lot higher than pick 18.
That's just it, right? He's a product of six quarterbacks and a remarkably deep tackle class. That's why you're able to sit there at 18 and get somebody that has the potential to be all pro. I mean, there's just only so many people you can say that about. But you mentioned, you know, people are going to go through the negatives, and so you're gonna talk about the sample size, and you're gonna talk about, you know, we have Nick Saban on the show talking about he pulled himself out of the SEC championship game, and that every player gets nitpicked like that, or they go in the top five, right? How do you sift through criticisms? How do you sift through that stuff with a guy when you're trying to figure out small sample size career that's kind of a unique study with him in particular, and in comparison to other tackles? How did you get through that stuff?
We sift through every piece of information that we have. You know, some of that stuff that you mentioned is just reported out there publicly. There's hundreds of other things, you know, positives, negatives on every single player that we've sorted through. We're kind of, our brains are on information overload right now at this point. But at the end of the day, you take in all of the factors. Like you said, you can even nitpick guys that are number one overall, top five picks. Every single guy has negatives, and that's part of our job, is to evaluate the good parts of the players and the bad parts of their evaluation, and just piece it all together by talking to the sources at the college, all of their coaches, all of their staff members, and then interviewing the players and speaking with them face-to-face and putting it all together and giving them a final evaluation and ranking on our draft board.
One more. So I remember you telling me the story about when you knew Joe Burrow was the guy. When you were driving back from Tuscaloosa after LSU went in there and beat Alabama there, saying that you knew then that's the dude. Like, that's the guy. Was there a moment during the process where you knew that, man, if Mims is there, I love this guy. Like, I'm on board. Because there are people that could be on either side of somebody with a small sample size and things like that. When did you know that you were more than comfortable with Mims?
I would say watching that Ohio State playoff game last year as a true sophomore. He's out there playing in his first start of his career, shutting down some really impressive guys on the edge there at Ohio State in a national semifinal type of game. That's really where he jumped out, is, hey, this guy's really, even though it's only his first start, there's some rare attributes that he has. And it's really not just traits. He's a pretty polished product altogether. His tape is really good, albeit a limited sample size compared to some other prospects. He's a really good player, both in pass protection and the run game. But he's a hard guy to miss when you first see him out there at practice. I probably saw him 3 years ago, his true freshman year, and they've had a ton of first-round picks on the defensive line that he's going against every day in practice. So that's also a piece of our evaluation that we put into it as a factor in terms of the live views that we have on the players and watching him against high-end guys that have, you know, been as high as number one overall pick in the draft that he's blocking in practice every day. So, you know, it's not just the 8 games that he started, the 30 or so games that he played in that we can view on tape. It's also our live views in practice, and he makes a heck of an impression down there going against some of the best competition in the country there at Georgia.
All right, let's move on to the second round pick. A bit of a tepid response for Chris Jenkins. Maybe you can help people fall in love with him a little bit more. Before we get to him on the football field, you're a guy, you look like you're in shape. Have you ever attempted a Turkish get-up?
I have not. It might not go very well for me.
Had you seen the video before you drafted him?
I have seen that. That's something that their strength coach there at Michigan showed to all the scouts coming through there. He was on that freaks list that they do every year that Bruce Feldman does. And that was one of the clips in there that I remember, just in terms of some of his freakish weight room numbers and explosive, athletic attributes that he has. So that's a small piece of the evaluation that you put it all together. But yeah, I had seen that video and it's very impressive.
So we all knew you were going to be taking at least one defensive tackle, and it felt like after Mims goes, that's the spot, 49, second round. There's a bunch of them on the board, and they start disappearing quickly. And Zach talked about every 7-minute round felt like 27 minutes. And Lou said he's just swimming at Chris Jenkins' name the entire time. What was that like for you waiting that out? And what kind of conversations were there about, do we take the chance that is there at 49, or do we want to move up and make sure we get it?
It's always tense when you have guys that you target. We definitely had defensive tackle at the top of our minds. There was a number of players at other positions that we liked a lot as well. So there was enough guys where we were able to stay patient. There was definitely conversations that we had, both in moving up there in the second round and really every round. Conversations moving up, moving back. There was probably over 100, if I had to guess, phone calls, texts in regards to trades. But I think the way it worked out, we did a really good job of staying patient, and there was, at least one or two guys there at each pick that we felt really good about and felt like we weren't dropping down a level of player, and we were really happy to get Chris there, both fitting us as a very highly graded player and a position that we felt was a need that we wanted to address there at defensive tackle.
So, the organization did something new this year where instead of bringing those guys, those second, third round guys in, for an official press conference, they just walked him into the media room, and just a kind of an informal chat with the writers and some of the TV people were there, and he commanded and owned that room the second he walked in. I'm just curious, when you guys met him at the combine or wherever you touched base with him, was it the same thing when he left the room? You guys are all just looking at each other, just talking about how impressed you were, who he is as a person?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You saw it. He has a big personality, kind of lights up the room when he walks in. And that the best thing is that aligned with the way his coaches there at Michigan talked about him. All of, strength coaches, his position coach. You talk to, the trainers, the academic people, all that. And they describe that type of personality. But then when you see it for yourself, face to face, you look him in the eye, you feel his presence, kind of magnetic personality to him. And he lit up the room when we brought him in for a combine interview. We'd bring him in later for a 30 visit, and it was the same thing. So you really get a strong comfort level with his character and who he is as a person.
I love Zach Taylor talking about the 30 visit, where he said, well, normally I get whatever, I spend 15, 20 minutes with him in my office, and I didn't have anything to say after a couple of minutes. Like, what else is there to say? This is the cleanest prospect maybe that we've ever brought in here. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So we just talked about stuff, what was going on, and I just, that's kind of Chris Jenkins. Far and away for me, my favorite pick of this draft for you guys, just because of the spot that he hits, what he can do. I imagine, I have this vision of Lou Anarumo just sneaking up behind you and Duke and being like, seriously, why don't we just trade up? Like, don't make me go through this for another 25 minutes, because he's perfect for what Lou likes to do. The versatility of those defensive linemen, ability to, not just be an athletic freak, but to stop the run and bring you something as a pass rusher, can play different spots. Like, it's like he was built in a Lou Anarumo lab in a lot of ways for the type of stuff that he likes to do inside and how he can mesh with Rankins and with B.J. Hill.
Yeah, he's a really versatile guy. I mean, we like how well-rounded his game is. Really long arms, explosive athlete. He can play the run and the pass. You know, we think he even has some maybe more untapped potential in his body and upside as a pass rusher. He can really get off the ball. You know, ran a 40 time in the 4.9s at that size. And like I said, he can play stout at the point of attack if you ask him to, or you can ask him to pin his ears back and get up the field as a pass rusher and disrupt as a one-gap penetrating type of defensive tackle. So there's a lot to like about his game on top of the character that we talked about. So we feel like it's a great fit for our team and for our locker room.
Let's go to the third round pick now. Jermaine Burton, wide receiver out of Alabama. You know, this one was a surprise, I think, to some people. It was maybe a little bit of a veer from what we were expecting or we had seen from you guys in the past. I want to, you know, because there's first-round talent, turn the tape, no-brainer, right? Like, that is what a first-round receiver looks like. The reason, and he admits this, you know, that he's sitting there and talking about the second, third, fourth, didn't know how late he was going to go, was, look, there's a lot of people talking about him and his background. There's nothing criminal there, but there was stuff with coaches. It was up and down relationships, and the word, you know, just a different guy was used a lot with him. This is the ultimate test for you guys as a scouting group, right? Let's vet this. How real is any of this? Where's our real sources here? What was the process of trying to uncover that light for you? Where did that start, and how did it end with you guys saying his name?
So he first started it first started, I should say, when he jumped on my radar. It was back in the COVID year, 2020, actually. We could only go to games and sit in the stands as scouts because of the COVID guidelines that we were operating under. Some stadiums didn't even have fans at all, obviously, and some had limited capacity there. So I remember going to the Georgia-Mississippi State game when Jermaine was still playing at Georgia, and he lit up Mississippi State that day as a true freshman, I believe. Went for, I believe, 8 catches, 197 yards, 2 touchdowns. So you put that in your memory bank. You mark that down. You as a guy to track into the future. Obviously, he's not coming out in that year's draft, but you know, a guy for into the future. So he hops on your radar. We've built up a lot of great sources both at Georgia and Alabama over the years, and you talk to every single person that you know to uncover every bit of information that you possibly can on a talented player like that. And then you go through the process this year, evaluate his tape at Alabama, which, like you said, was phenomenal. Very explosive player, can separate. He's got excellent hands, very competitive, very passionate football player. He's a guy that we also, just like Chris Jenkins, we did a formal interview with him at the combine, and then we bring him back in later. I believe I think it was early April, we brought him back in for a 30 visit into Cincinnati to, you know, be around everybody for a full day and a half. And you kind of develop that relationship with him, gain that confidence and the conviction in who he is as a player and who he is as a person, maybe more importantly. And also the situation that we're dropping him into is very, very advantageous, I think, for us and for him in terms of the receiver room that he's in, not only with the players that he's going to compete with. He's an ultimate competitor, but also Troy Walters, our receiver coach, who I think is one of the best in the league. And he's going to be great for Jermaine in terms of developing him, mentoring him, and I think you couldn't ask for a better situation to put him into.
Yeah, I mean, that's to me the thing is, you set yourself up. Why have these great coaches? Why build all this culture? Why have a room like your receiver room that has a star that is maybe the hardest working guy on your entire team? Why have a quarterback in Joe Burrow who is known for his ability to lead from the quarterback position and push and know how to connect with people that way? All of that, was this kind of the frame and example where it kind of set you guys up to take a chance on somebody that other teams wouldn't because they don't feel like they have that infrastructure in, but you guys maybe are uniquely suited because of all of those things that you feel like you've built the right way?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for other teams. I know there's a number of teams around the league that did like him a lot. I mean, how could you not like him when you turn his tape on? But, yeah, I mean, you have to, as a scout, you have to scout the player. You also have to scout and evaluate the position that you're putting him into in terms of the coach that he's going to be with, the other players he's going to be around. And I think this guy is, when he's challenged, he's a competitive guy. He's gonna want to compete on a day-to-day basis with guys like Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, the rest of the great receivers that we have in that room. So we feel really good about it. And, you know, is there going to be development on and off the field that he's going to need? Absolutely. There's, you know, none of these guys are coming in as finished products. But the upside that he has is very exciting, and we think he can be an impact player for us.
One more aspect of this I want to ask you about when we can move on. I talked to T.J. Houshmandzadeh a couple days ago, who has been training with Jermaine for 3 years now, and they've developed a pretty close relationship. He had this to say. I brought up the fact that, is it maybe there was coaches complaining. He said, coaches do complain. Do you think a coach, when you leave the University of Georgia to go to their arch-rival Alabama, is going to have something good to say? You put things in perspective. In a world of NIL, these kids get their asses kissed. So then when you're not kissing their ass, they may react a way that they shouldn't. Jermaine can be somewhat temperamental. But who is it? There are very few guys that are even keel. Very few. I don't have any doubt Jermaine will be fine outside the lines. I don't have any doubt about that because he is going to hear it constantly from me. That was from T.J. Houshmandzadeh the other day. A guy that you guys as an organization know well, okay? How much do you tap into TJ, who has been working with them, that knows this guy, to help you out with, hey, what, you know, tell me more about this, and how much weight does that hold in your guys' conversations?
It's always a piece of the puzzle. Like I said, we try to talk to every possible person that we can talk to. We saw TJ at the combine this year. TJ also worked with T. Higgins some coming out of college, so it would never be the deciding factor on why you would take a guy, because you're not going to just take one man's opinion. But it's certainly something that carries weight, as is probably, you know, the 10, 20, 30 other people that we talk to about Jermaine. So at the end of the day, you piece the puzzle together on the common themes that you're hearing from the sources that you talk to in the scouting process. You look the player in the eye, you interview him in your multiple exposures that you have with him in person. And at the end of the day, you put an evaluation on it. And, you know, we made the decision as an organization. We were all on board with it to pull him off the board there with the 80th pick in the third round. And, you know, we feel excited about it and looking forward to what he can do for us.
TJ also wanted to take credit for you guys drafting T. Higgins. He said that was because of him. He said, look, they called me the day they were drafting T. Higgins, and I told him, draft T. Higgins. So he's also trying to say that that's all on him. So he wants the credit. So feel free to give it to him.
He can have the credit if he wants it.
I do have one
scout,
more.
Scouting is a you're not looking for praise. You just fly under the radar. You're not looking for the accolades. So you kind of operate behind the scenes. So whoever wants the credit can have it.
TJ would like to operate in front of the scenes.
As often as possible. I did want to ask, not necessarily about Jermaine, but about the selection of Jermaine, because we saw it on the TV, Zach's reaction, pounding the table. Those of us that have covered the team since he's been here have never seen that before. Now, we don't see his reaction to every single pick. Have you seen that kind of excitement from him in the draft room or really anywhere outside of winning a game?
Yeah, Zach's a big part of our process. I think he gets excited about every pick that we make. I know that was caught there on TV, so maybe it was a little bit more widely publicized, but he's a great part of our process. He's very involved, very easy to work with. He does the work, and so, you know, in terms of watching the tape, meeting with the guys when we bring them in, going through the character vetting process on all of these guys, and communicating with our personnel staff and with his coaching staff and our ownership group in terms of our evaluations on these players. So I think at the end of the day, Zach is on board, as all of us are. You know, it's a Bengals pick. It's not just one person's pick, or, you know, if it was just one guy that was an outlier on a player, we probably wouldn't select that player. But I don't want to put words in his mouth in terms of how excited he was, but I think he's a great part of our process, and he's excited about every pick that we make. And in this case, Jermaine is a guy that we were all excited about.
So the second pick in the third round, McKinley Jackson, another defensive tackle. You talked about it before, where you run simulations and you always have a plan. Did you know going into this draft that you were going to take two run-stopping tackles within the first four picks, first five picks? Was that a master plan, or did you just see McKinley sitting there and say, you got to have him?
We didn't know for sure. We didn't know how it would fall. You know, there was not a ton of those big true nose tackles in this draft like McKinley Jackson. That was probably one position that was a little bit thinner on the board up there. But that was obviously losing DJ Reader. That's something that we wanted to address in terms of big run stopping defensive tackles. And I think both of those guys have upside in the pass game as well, so I don't want to just label them as run stuffers. But McKinley's a guy that we had very strong grades on. Another guy, you know, it sounds like a repetitive statement, but another guy that we did a formal interview at the Combine and brought him in for a 30 visit. And that's kind of part of my job to organize those, both from the interview and the visit part of it. So I'm glad that we were able to work through the process with him, gain conviction on him as a person and a player, and we think he's a strong, physical, big, violent player who can you know, really help us there on the interior D-line.
He's one of the guys that I think there was the biggest variance. If you look at the draft analysts and all that, sixth or seventh round, fourth round, third, I mean, he was all over the board. And you talked about it when you run your simulations. How much do you pay attention to where other people, I know it's not going to decide where you pick it, but just to kind of get a feel where other teams might be leaning and if a guy might be available. Do you look at what other people are writing or saying about these prospects?
We factor it all in. We run studies on everything that's going on externally. We talk to other people with other clubs around the league to try to gauge different interests. You know, we study who's doing private workouts, who's bringing who in for visits, who's going to what pro day. So we track a lot of different things, and that's something that we factor in. At the end of the day, it's never going to be more important than our evaluation on the player where we grade him, but it is a factor, and we take in every piece of information that we possibly can get, and we just end up piecing it all together in terms of putting a final value on the board, because you know, you may grade a guy in a certain round on tape, but because of other factors, you maybe feel that you can get that guy a little bit later. Not to jump ahead of ourselves, but that could also tie in with Eric Hall, who's our fourth round pick, you know, in that case for a medical reason, which would be a reason why you could get a guy like him of his talent level later maybe than what the true tape evaluation would say.
Great segue.
Yeah, we were talking to DJ Turner the other day, who knows Eric all really well, and he said, we knew then when he was at Michigan with us, like, everyone believed that that's a first round tight end. That's what that looks like. And his play, people were talking about this play the other day, and I remember watching it at the time, and not until it was brought back up that it was him did I realize it was him. A play late in the game against Penn State for Michigan that changed the tide of their entire program in a lot of ways, where he takes a crosser underneath and runs away from everybody for a game-winning touchdown. And that was something that really set Michigan in the direction that they ended up going. How, you know, with the medicals and with him, where is that just a, hey, doc, is he clear? How do you have to be like, how many doctors do we need involved in this? Do we need a whole team of doctors to tell us? Like, where is the, when you get into medicals, is it as clean as what your docs say? Or how do you evaluate all of that?
We grade everything A through F. Our doctors do that, an A through F medical grade at the combine. And then our scouts also have a numerical grade on the guy from the scouting process, from the information they gathered from the trainers, talking to those guys at the colleges on the visit during the fall. And we piece that all together. It's a grade both on what the player has had injury-wise and the time that they've missed. Not every injury is the same, and you're trying to project that in terms of what his durability may be going into the future, into the NFL. You know, obviously a guy could never miss time in college and then miss time in the NFL and vice versa. So it's not a perfect process. It's something that we're constantly having discussions on. And you put a grade on the guy, you give him a timeline on if, in this case, he has a current injury that he's rehabbing and coming back from. you put that timeline on when our doctors would project him to be ready, and then you kind of go from there in terms of grading him. And you know, at the end of the day, you just have to put a value on it. Like you said, you grade the tape. We think his tape was probably a little bit better than a guy that you can get in the fourth round. But again, we're probably fortunate to be able to get him there because of those other factors.
I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, Landon Dickerson coming out in Philadelphia ended up taking him, I think it was pick 37. But there was like, people were saying, I don't know if he's even draftable from a medical perspective. He had all these bad injuries, even though everybody loved everything you've seen from him. And guess what? He's come in and been as healthy as can be, and now he's the highest paid guard in football. It's like, but then you'll have people that never had a single injury, and they were just absolutely, just their career derailed by it. And so you never quite know. The bottom line is with Eric, I mean, how much was the fact that at Iowa, before the ACL, he looked like the same guy, right? I mean, the back is the issue that happened at Michigan. That should have given it. Was that really the convincing thing beyond everything else for you guys? Like, I don't know. That's what we want to draft, is the guy that looked like he did at Iowa.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right, and the example you use is perfect. I think the other thing that we factor in is the intangibles, the makeup, the drive, the toughness, the work ethic of these guys and their character makeup, in terms of not every guy that is, like, let's say a C medical grade is the same, because, you know, some guys maybe don't have as strong of work habits to rehab and really come back from a serious injury like that. Some guys don't love football as much. They're not as motivated enough to get back out there, you know, and maybe beat their timeline on the injury. So that's something that we have to factor in, on top of the way our doctors just looking at, you know, the injuries they've had and projecting a timeline. So with in Eric's case, we've been scouting him since he was back at Michigan. He's a very high character guy. For you guys that have gotten to talk to him, or maybe that know him from being around here and from Cincinnati, very high character guy, captain type, who was raved about at both schools in terms of his character. So if you're going to bet on a guy coming back from a serious injury, he's the type of guy that you want to bet on.
Two picks later, you take another tight end, Tanner Botley. Is that pick tied at all to Eric Hall's knee, to his injury, or are you saying, if we're good enough to draft him, there's no need for contingency. You're taking Tanner Blackman because you like him, and you would take him there, even if you haven't drafted Eric Ball already.
I would say it helps having Tanner come in, you know, with you know, not necessarily knowing what Eric's timeline will be coming back. But the main factor for drafting Tanner was he was the best player on our board. We thought he could have gone a lot higher than the sixth round, where we took him. So that was really the main factor, was he was just sticking out on our board. I mean, he's an explosive athlete, great hands, great separator as a route runner in the pass game, and we think he's got some upside as a blocker as well. So we just, at the end of the day, tight end, we didn't have a ton of numbers in that room going in. We've got some guys that we like on the current roster going into the draft, but that's something that we wanted to address in that depth to that tight end room. And we're really glad that we came out with those two guys, you know, coming out of the draft.
One more I wanted to dive into, and that's Josh Newton, who maybe goes under the radar a little bit in this draft, but I know he doesn't for you guys. You know, in talking to a few other people, you guys really like Josh Newton, and there's a lot to like about Josh Newton. I mean, he's a – I don't know if people – I know Dan Hoard tweeted this out the other day, and I've heard a couple people tell me about it too. This speech that he made that basically set off their dream season of him talking about going 0-10 at his previous stop during the COVID year, and how that was kind of local legend almost around TCU, which ends up having that unbelievable run that they had. He's that kind of a player. His whole background has all kinds of adversity in it. How much of who he became as a player did that personality show on the field? And what are you getting beyond that?
Yeah, I think it did show on the field for sure. I mean, he's a passionate, competitive football player. The background and the speech that you mentioned was something that we talked about in our meetings, going over his background, his character, you know, his makeup, the adversity that he's overcome. So those are the type of guys that we're looking for, you know, as ideal fits on our team. And I think, like you mentioned, when the coaches talk about them that way, and then it shows up on their tape, that's when it all comes together and you really have confidence in what you're getting. But he's an instinctive player, been very, very productive, very good cover skills. We think he can potentially play inside and outside at the corner position for us. So another guy, we were glad to get there in the fifth round. We felt like, you know, in all of our studies and our evaluations, he's a guy that could have definitely went higher than where we got him. And corner's a position we wanted to address, and we felt fortunate to get a guy of his caliber there in the fifth round.
And his nickname's Fig. Fig Newton. I mean, what's better than that? It's full cooked in. Let's give him some commercials.
When you met with him, how many times did he say shit? Or was he buttoned up with you guys?
I don't think it was as many as with you guys. Just talking through football and having film on. I heard about the presser or the media availability that he had with you guys, but I think that's him showing the passion that he has. And you know, we look for guys like that. So it's he's a guy that we're really happy about it, and we're excited to see what he can do as a Bengal.
Well, I mean, that's just it. He was saying, shit, I'll play anywhere. Put me out there. I'm the Swiss Army knife. You know, I mean, it was every single one. It was like, you know, he used them in different ways. They each meant something a little different. And I appreciated the way he spread it across with different meanings. I won't make you get into the Cedric Johnson, Dejon Anthony, Matt Lee. Any quick thoughts on those three guys, Lee?
We like all those guys. Again, guys that we see as fits for our team, both in the character makeup work that we've done on them and evaluations as players. Adding guys that are at the top of our board and adding depth, quality competition in camp, and we like to think we have a pretty good roster, and it's going to be a hard team to make, but those guys are very talented guys that were very highly regarded by our scouts and coaches, and we think they're going to add great competition in camp, push for roster spots, potentially be really good depth pieces and potential starters for us down the line, in some of those guys' cases. So again, we stuck to our board with those guys, and we're very, very happy with the way it turned out.
You know, it's one thing, I was going through the depth chart and trying to look at it, and I'm like, man, I don't know where to put some of these picks. There's not a lot of room. That's a great problem to have. That's what you guys are trying to do. Was that kind of part of it when, you could have consolidated some of those picks and moved up to make sure you got a certain guy to stick and just take 10 and let the competition flow? Is there an advantage or strategy behind that of, look, let's just have even more competition on the back end than we would normally have and take advantage of those extra picks that way?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you can't go wrong with having as much depth and as much talent as possible, and football is a violent game. So, I mean, there's going to be injuries. I always say it, what our roster is right now after the draft isn't what our roster is going to be a month from now. It isn't what our training camp roster, our 90-man going in to camp at the end of July is going to be, and it's certainly not what our roster is going to be in October, November, hopefully into January and February. So, a guy that maybe doesn't necessarily have a clear fit to make it right now, you're going to be glad that you had that guy later into the process, and he's going to add, competition and push other guys to be better as well. It's a great thing. You can never go wrong with adding competition to the roster.
Well, 10 picks were just the end of a year of work and travel and Marriott points, Sky Miles, and all those good things. I know you guys have racked up more than your fair share of those, but it's a hell of a task that you guys are asked to do, and you guys continue to do an incredible job. And I just want to say thank you for coming out and sharing, your background with these guys.
Drinks going.
Someone's smoking weed behind us. Everybody's having a good time out here. Let's hear it again for Mike Potts, who came out and joined us. Great to have him in. Thanks to those who have submitted some questions. We will get to those in a second, but we have a big moment. We did the raffle that we were saying, look, you pick the number one selection correctly, send it to us before the draft, and if you get it right and come down here, there will be $50 for you to come down and place a Bengals futures bet over here at BetMGM. You walk down to one of these delightful windows and place the bet. But there's kind of a stipulation on that. You got to hop on here and you got to announce which of the Bengals futures you are going to choose to use for your $50.
Right, because if you're going to come up here and take the season wins over under and go under, you're going to get booed out of this place aggressively.
Or you're going to make money, the best chance to make money potentially.
No, that is a coward's move to take the under on wins. And if you do that, we will force you out of the building. So think about that if you're going to go under on wins. I think the power move is to go Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying that you should do that because you've garnered plenty of hate with your Super Bowl prediction.
I would never.
You are not allowed to take. You're not allowed to mention that. But Trey, he could.
He could.
He could.
So Trey is here. Super Bowl is going up at plus 1400.
Don't ask us how much that is.
The Bengals to win the AFC is plus 750. The Bengals to win the North is plus 165, and it is minus 125. On the over-under of 10.5 wins. Trey, come on up here. Let's hear it for Trey. You got the pick right.
GM in waiting.
And
just crushed it.
Trey, congratulations. You knew you were going to get it right. You felt it. Is Mike Potts your friend? How did this happen?
Yeah, I just had a feeling, you know. Watched the footage myself,
You're just grinding tape. Grinding the tape over here. You knew it's always that.
Were you excited watching the draft when your guy won?
Absolutely. Especially watching that versus, you know, watching Michael Penix get taken at 8.
Right.
Penix shade. We love it.
All right, so here is $50. You need to make the announcement for everyone. Are you going to be a coward and try to just win a little money? What is your selection, Trey?
With the Super Bowl in New Orleans. I got the Bengals winning the Super Bowl.
Yes! There it is! That's how you make friends. Pass this down him to go place his Bengals win the Super Bowl bet. Congrats to Trey.
Somebody watch him to make sure he places
make
that bet.
Sure.
Doesn't just run away.
He's going to go sneak down there, and he's going to sneak in that over-under.
Trey is about to jump on a motorcycle.
We're
going to
need to see that ticket. We're going to need to see that ticket when he's done. All right, so we've got – y'all have submitted some questions – that we will do our best to get through and see how this goes.
This is a good one to start with from Ryan. Is it possible for Jermaine Burton to have a prominent role in the offense this year? What does he need to do to make that happen?
Show up. I mean, he can have a prominent role in week one. I would not be surprised to see him be the starting receiver next to Higgins and Chase in week one. That's what they brought him here for. The receivers seem to have a smoother transition to jump in and play right away than some of the other guys that are dealing with guys in the trenches at the point of attack are much bigger and stronger than they're used to. I think Burton absolutely can come in, develop a rapport with Joe Burrow in camp and OTAs and be the starting wide receiver 3 in week one.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's going to be a role for everyone. I think the interesting thing about the setup that they have in the receiver room now is they got a bunch of different types.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Jamar, who's Mr. Everything number one. You've got T, we know what he is. But with the rest of it, you have a chance to bring Charlie Jones in if he can develop and be more of a pure slot for you. Andre Yoshivash is a fascinating player to see what he looks like in year two. He came in as a raw project. Well, what does year two look like for him? Can he steal some snaps in certain situations? Can he be a red zone role guy? Is Burton playing as your inside, outside? Is he T. Higgins backup? Is he just a guy that you work into certain packages? Is he playing in the slot? The fact that he can do so many different things, I think opens up where all of those guys can find ways to contribute in different ways. But I'm with you. I think Burton is wide receiver 3 tomorrow if all goes as they want it to.
All right, our next one is a run, pass, or boot. Always a good favorite here. Who's got the biggest year one impact between Mims, Jenkins, or Burton?
Well, I think we might have just answered that. I'm going to run with Burton. I'll pass on Jenkins. I think he's going to have an impact, but he's still part of a rotation. He may not have as high of a snap percentage as Burton does, and I'll boot Mims just based on the way things are laid out right now. But, I mean, Trent Brown's started, 38 games in the last 4 years, 9.5 a year. There are injury concerns with him. And if, if he does go down and it's a long-term injury and Mims takes over, that could be your answer, but it's a big if. There's a lot that needs to happen, so I'm gonna run with Burton.
I'm gonna run with Jenkins. I just think he is gonna be an instant impact guy immediately and part of that rotation. You know, Sheldon Rankins is not meant to play 1,000 snaps. Sheldon Rankins is not meant to play 750 snaps. He's meant to be a 500 to 600 snap menace, okay? And with him and B.J. Hill and Jenkins, they're all three. I could see all three of those having about the same amount of snaps if they stay healthy by the time this thing is done. And that's a lot of run for Chris Jenkins. And if he can be the type of guy that he was in Michigan, I think he can have an even bigger impact than Burton, because there's still questions about how quickly Burton can get worked in, what happens with the other guys we mentioned. So I'll pass on him, and then I'll boot Mims. But I got to tell you, I think it's certainly far from a non-zero chance that Mims is your starting right tackle of the day.
Injury, not even a factor.
What if he comes in and he's an absolute wall?
Yeah.
I mean, and he's exactly who he was when he played at Georgia. He spends the whole preseason just like throwing people around, and he's great in practice. And Trent Brown looks okay. Trent Brown is a swing tackle who it's great to have him on the left or right side. I think they would prefer it to be Trent Brown on opening day. That path is open.
Yeah.
If he comes in and looks like what he has looked like at certain times at Georgia, then I don't see them being like, oh, we're afraid to put him out there on opening day. I think they would happily throw him out.
If we're going to stick with those top three picks here, with the next run, pass, or boot, get a little bit more into the details. This time it's Jenkins, tackles for loss, Burton, explosive plays, or Mims, game started. What do you run, pass, or booting on those? Tackles for loss, explosive plays, game started. That is a good one from Caleb. Shout out Caleb on that one.
Yeah, I'll say explosive plays. Explosive plays for Burton. I mean, that's his thing. I mean, above all,
yes. 20.5.
Yeah, his ability to make plays down the field, and that's just it. If you're using him inside and outside, slot fades, outside stuff, every time they cloud to T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, you can run Burton down the field. He's really impressive on back shoulders, and we know how Burrow goes. So I think, you know, if you're classifying explosive as 20-plus, I'll give that. And then I don't know. I think I might go Mims starts, just because I do think at some point one of the tackles are going to get hurt. Potentially, I mean, Orlando Brown has been as good as it gets in terms of availability, but somebody gets hurt or he wins out, or it's hard to imagine not playing. So I'll go to Mims, even though I think Jenkins is going to have a really nice play.
Yeah, I mean, if we're calling 20 yards an explosive play, Jermaine Burton averaged 20.5 yards per catch, so he averaged an explosive play every time he touched the ball.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you run there. I'll pass on Jenkins, because if we're talking tackle for loss, a sack counts as a tackle for loss as well. He's going to be in there. He's going to have, I think, a lot of chances. Mims might, and he might not. So I'm just going to play the percentages there and go with Jenkins ahead. I'll boot Mims.
I mean, I guess it would be nice if the offensive line stayed healthy and he didn't have to start a ton of games again. Our next question, this one's from Marty. How many shifts did Cedric Johnson drop on the interview? Over under 12?
He dropped none.
Cedric, no.
Josh Newton was our guy.
Terrible question in here from Marty. Sorry, Marty.
Well, it was well over 7.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check. Yeah, more than 7. 12 was the over under there.
It was more than 7?
Yeah, seven. I think it was probably, that's a good line, actually. That's a good handicap. I think it was probably was about 12. Probably was about, there's a lot of them that were just slipped under. You know, just like, did he, was that,
wow.
Was that another
right,
one?
We have the official number. You went under or over 12?
I think it was probably right on. I'd say 12.
You'd say 12?
I'd say over. I think it was well over.
What was the final number? 22. Should we have, I guess we're done with the, we can say that, right?
We can do whatever we want.
We can do whatever we want. Let's start dropping F-bombs on this podcast then. Which draft pick over the last 2 years are you most excited to see develop this year?
I'm excited to see what happens with Dax Hill. I don't know how you're not. Let's see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen.
Dax Hill clapping? All right, some Dax Hill fans are still here.
I don't know that it's going to be good. I'm excited to see it.
And also, don't clap too much. Paul is the one that started the trade Dax Hill rumors.
No.
You know, he pushed the whole trade Dax Hill narrative.
There we go. Get the boo. It's been too long. It's been too long since I've been booed in public. You know, I just, it would have been interesting to see what would have happened with that conversation had they taken a corner or two earlier in the draft, which guys were on their board, obviously. But I do think, I mean, if it's about, am I excited to what? I'm curious to see what it looks like. We've heard, I remember people like Mike Potts on that personnel staff talking about them believing that he can play outside corner the day he was drafted. That's been mentioned the entire time that he's been here. And so now a chance to see if he can do it. Does he end up in the slot? They're giving him a real chance. That's who I'm most excited to see what the next level looks like for him.
For me, it's Chase Brown. You know, with Joe Mixon's gone, there's no reason to hold him back. I think you're going to see a lot more of Chase Brown this year, and it was pretty electric when they did get him in last year. And yeah, he's not going to be the bell cow. He's going to be splitting with Zach Moss, but I think it's going to be really fun to see what that guy can do with a much increased workload.
I mean, it's unfair to not mention Miles Murphy here.
Yeah.
Right. Now, there's a lot to mention, but I just think you saw the light come on with Miles Murphy down the stretch, and they're going to give him a bigger role. He will get snaps. They're not going to go through another year where they're having to find these 10 to 15 snaps for Miles Murphy every game. That's going to be baked into the game plan, him playing both sides, kicking Sam Hubbard inside some. Doing what, you know, if guy is struggling at all as far as an injury or anything, early in games, full series, I just think you're going to see a lot of Miles Murphy this year.
I'm a DJ Turner guy on that one because he's going to see a lot more, you know, action. Since they didn't take a corner high, you're going to have to trust him to get past that rookie wall. So I think he could have a big year too.
He's going to have to beat up Dax Hill apparently.
Yeah, I guess so.
Who knows?
This next one's a little bit lighter. Who would win a Coney eating contest at a prior Bengals? 5-minute timer.
Who would eat a Coney eating contest?
Who would win a Coney eating contest?
Andre Smith?
Oh, that's what I was going to do.
I mean, that would be an obvious, right? I mean, we've seen him put some food down, no problem. I mean, any of these big offensive linemen is a good way to go, but Andre get into it. I think he'd be competitive.
Marius Mims makes a Coney look like an aspirin. He could just pop those one after another after another.
But the other thing is, think about it. I mean, we're talking about hot dogs. I mean, Kobayashi was like 82 pounds. So I don't know that it's a matter of girth or willingness. It's a matter of technique. So who would be the Coney technician is maybe a better question here. I think we've proved. I mean, Joey Chestnut is not 394 pounds.
Yeah, and it's also like you see some of those guys that really turn their nose up in Skyline Chili, and that could be a big part of it too, where they come from a different region of the country, and they're like, oh, I can't handle this. Because they have soft stomachs in the South sometimes, so you can't handle the good chili. Our next run passer, Boone. Burton turning into TJ Hushmanzada 2.0, Eric All living up to his ceiling, or Dax becoming a solid / Pro Bowl corner, which I think is a pretty big discrepancy between those two. But
yes.
Where you run past or booting, even Dax is just a solid starting corner.
I think Eric All living up to his ceiling is certainly, I mean, assuming he is healthy, there's no reason to believe that he's suddenly going to come out here and get hurt again. So that would be my run on that one.
I mean, I think Burton can go past TJ Hushmanzada.
In what regard?
It just in terms of overall production. I mean, TJ was a seventh round guy. He played with Chad. He had a great career here. But when T. Higgins moves on, and it's Jamar and Jermaine Burton, and if he's hitting the ground running in week one, I wouldn't put it past him to put up bigger numbers than what TJ did in his career here, if he plays as long.
I don't know. I might have to – should I put TJ on the line right now and tell him what you just said? Should we get him back and see what he – I don't think he'd like that.
I'm going to put a shit counter on him.
Yeah.
All right, run pass of good. More surprised by the two tight ends being picked, 0 running backs being picked, or only one interior defensive lineman getting picked?
I think the no running backs, I would have thought there would have been one running back in there.
Yeah, the 10 picks?
Yeah, no interior run until the 7th was a surprise. Two tight ends was not a surprise for me.
No.
I felt like that was just the board was there, so they ran it.
For me, it was the no off interior offensive line until the 7th round. That really did stun me. That would be my run.
Is this the last one?
This is the last one. This is...
All right. This one, it's directed for you, Paul. I've got one question the fans must know. Jay being the great stat guy, and Jay runs the best fantasy league in the city. How many fantasy championships has Jay won?
How many fantasy championships has Jay won? What's the answer to that?
Okay, so
the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah,
it is. Feels like.
Yeah,
you guys have all played fantasy leagues. You've all got in pools, and when the guy running it wins, it loses a sour taste in everyone's mouth. So I'm not about winning titles. I'm about making it the best experience for the other guys in the league. So the answer is zero.
Wow.
But it's not for lack of ability. It's for lack of full effort.
So when you purposely draft off and just take kickers with the first three rounds, like how is that? What exactly is your strategy?
He's such a
polite
loser. I like that.
I'm totally lying. I tried really hard and I just never. I've been to the championship three times and lost.
There it is. Make sure you give your chance.
The Buffalo Jays.
Hang the banner for second place. That's great.
So I have a question for all of you guys that came out here to the show. Did you guys have a good time today?